January 18th, 2013. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Hope you've enjoyed one of the more bizarre weeks just in general in life. This podcast is very much real. I am real. I am your host, Matt Norlander. I'm bringing on someone who is also real, because I've met him before, and you've read his writing, Eamon Brennan from ESPN.com. We're bringing him back. Dude, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm feeling very real, very tangible, corporeal this morning, because I'm very tired, and if you are not a real person who exists only in the world of Twitter, I don't think you're allowed to feel tired. I don't think that's how it works.
Someone had a good tweet. I forget who it was. It might have been Spencer Hall, but just they had a commentary on how fun this whole Manti Te'o thing was, because they were reading so many jokes from people who made up like fake internet personas on Twitter, and it was like, yeah, you know, that's damn accurate. But anyway, we're not going to really touch the Te'o stuff, because that ain't college basketball. And I'm actually kind of thankful that this did not happen to college basketball. Can you imagine our lives if it did? If this was like happened to Cody Zeller?
I know. Well, beyond the sort of frightening, oh, I could have totally written a blog post or even a feature,
yeah,
included those details, because now I was talking to my roommate about it, and it's like, once something like that gets in the bloodstream early on, you know, and the next level of it is, so say the South Bend Tribune or whomever posts a story, or the Indianapolis Star, and then it gets to that next level of like, we write about it and like, oh, isn't this a cool story? Here's a blog post and a link.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of just gets in, you know what I mean? Like, once yep. it's there. And in this case, obviously, it got way out of hand. But, I mean, it's not inconceivable that any of that could happen. I think there are obviously some issues further and further along. But, yeah, it's a little bit frightening. So there's not only that issue. There's also the issue of how miserable it would be to be constantly tracking and chasing this stuff down in the middle of our season. Like,
yeah,
I would be really, really upset about it. Let's just say that. And I would be mad for that reason, not the reason like I was duped. I would be furious and going after whoever did it with my pitchfork in the sky, because you're ruining the time I'm supposed to be sitting watching 8 basketball games a day, and I don't like that.
Exactly. If anything, our college football brethren, they have an off season now that they can approach this with, and that makes it a little easier. But, you know, before we get into the games, I mean, it is interesting, because I think that college kids in general, like when we go to these games and we talk to these players and we get quotes about the game, sometimes, you know, the conversation, whatever we're discussing with them, depending on the material, it can float into something that's, you know, maybe not directly related to the game they just played or whatever. And I'm always wary of what these 18, 19, 20-year-olds tell us, because the interesting thing about talking to these kids is they a lot of them have very good media savvy, but it becomes this thing where they almost, and I this is the impression I get, you might not feel the same, but they almost feel like they just have to feed whatever narrative it is. And so sometimes it's just canned quotes, and sometimes I feel like writers might try and look for a certain angle on a story, and the kid's just 18 or 19, and he's like, yeah, I'll just kind of give him this. And within that, however small or big it may be, they might feed a fib or two. And so on a much lesser scale, I think this stuff happens fairly consistently within sports, because of just the context you're dealing with, specifically college athletes, because they, you know, they're just, when you're in that situation talking to a kid in the locker room and you've got like 6 minutes, it's just a much different, you know, it's a much different animal what you're dealing with.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to make too sweeping a statement about athletes, I would think, but the entire thing is, look, I mean, our job is to tell good stories, right? That's what I would anyway consider my job, basically, besides, you know, watching basketball and answering people's questions about whether I think X team can get to the Final Four or the Sweet 16 and explaining this why that's a bad question. Our job is to tell stories, I think, and everyone wants to tell a good story. And the desire for that within sports, especially when it's something sort of inspirational or even something just sort of fun. I think there's a pretty constant desire for that. And I think it's, like I said, it's easy for something to be out there from one place or another. And it gets picked up so quickly and so effortlessly and gets sort of rushed into the bloodstream so quickly and so effortlessly that you can see how that stuff gets there and then why it's really hard to pull back out.
All right, let's talk some hoops. And if we've got listeners who have spent the week kind of doing a drive-by with college basketball and have only really picked up on the Lance Armstrong stuff, the Manti Te'o stuff, maybe you're getting ready for the playoffs and you didn't get a lot of college basketball on your radar, I wanted to ask you to look back before we do look ahead to the weekend's games. What stood out to you? Two or three things if you want to kind of wax here on what we've seen, because it was a fairly loaded week with some interesting results.
Yeah, no, it was a very interesting week. I thought the thing that stuck out to me was Indiana losing to Wisconsin at home. Not only I think does Wisconsin deserve a ton of credit for that win, because they just sort of controlled the game on the road. In a very, very tough place to play, a place where Indiana usually plays very well. The ability of Wisconsin to control that game and the inability of Indiana, I think, to sort of react and to impose itself on the game. I know that's a cliche, but I think in Indiana's case, it's really telling. Like, I think IU hasn't yet learned that it's the very frequently the best team on the court. And if it just attacks, usually it's going to be in better position than if it sits back and waits the way it did against Wisconsin, often in zone, letting Wisconsin take the ball down, take the clock down for 30 seconds at a time, and then not really attacking them on offense on the other end, just kind of letting Wisconsin draw them into a, okay, let's pass the ball around the perimeter sort of game. And I think that that's the biggest concern about Indiana going forward is not so much can they play against slow physical teams, which I had a lot of people email me this week and sort of worried about Indiana fans specifically, like, oh, we can't play against slow teams. We can't play against physical teams. Look at Butler. Look at Wisconsin. I don't think it's even that so much as just when you play VCU, you are going to play VCU's style of basketball game, whether you like it or not. And I think that's kind of where Indiana needs to get is realizing that they're the best team on the floor more often than not, and that it's incumbent upon them to control not only the pace of the game, but sort of the style and how they're attacking. I also thought Michigan's win at Minnesota was incredibly impressive for some of the same reasons as Wisconsin's. Right from the opening tip, basically, they not only controlled the game, but they controlled the crowd. They kept sort of a buzzing crowd out of the game all the way through, never really allowed them to get their lather up. And I thought that was just it was sort of clinical in the way they handled it and really impressive considering some of those guys are so young. And really their sort of team leader, Trey Burke, is still a sophomore. I mean, I just think they've been a really impressive team, obviously offensively, but just in general, the way they sort of handle their business. Their locker room seems like, without reading deeply into it, that they're very sort of all together and there's not a whole lot of drama there. They're just good dudes who like to play basketball, and I think that's a huge helper.
Yeah, I love watching Michigan play. You make a good point about Indiana and VCU. VCU, man, they are fun as hell to watch. 15-3 right now. I wonder, trying to project a little bit here, and I wonder if any of the A-10 teams, specifically VCU, will get to the really good matchup with another A-10 team this weekend on Saturday in just a second. But, I wonder if Butler, or we'll see what Temple, I guess, becomes, if they'll be considered like legitimate Final Four teams as we go forward here. Because, I mean, Butler and VCU between them are 30-3. And in general, like people are giving the A-10 a little bit of love here, but Charlotte's a 15-2 team. No one's talking about just kind of a sneaky upstart there. I'm interested to see as it gets into league play here, and the A-10 could be the best it's been in years and years and years. How much more love it's going to get?
Yeah, Charlotte's actually, I've been doing A-10 power rankings obviously every week. Maybe that's not obvious. Some people might have no idea. I do the every Friday. I do the Big Ten and Atlantic 10 power rankings on our site, and yeah, Charlotte's been a really interesting team to track all season because they are winning a bunch of games, but they've also had a pretty horrendous.
Yeah, it's a joke of a schedule to not even be kind about it.
It's really bad, and their only win over a team ranked above 100 in KenPom was a home win over LaSalle, which, you know, it's a nice win. LaSalle's pretty decent team, but it's not like a crazy good win. So still sort of figuring Charlotte out, and not even figuring out, just sort of seeing if their style is going to work when they get into the, you know, good A-10 opponents, because they defend like crazy, and they rebound and they're physical on the offensive end. They draw a bunch of fouls. But when it comes to like the finesse parts of the game, i.e. shooting, ball handling, they're not particularly good. But no, the Atlantic 10 is an interesting league because it's deep, but it isn't, you know, it isn't probably as good at the high levels that I thought it was going to be before the season. Obviously, VCU and Butler are both very good. But from there, you're sort of talking about Temple, which has been very up and down. St. Joe's, which you never know. St. Louis, which is a great defensive team but doesn't score the ball particularly well. And then after that, it's just sort of like you're kind of still figuring, like LaSalle, UMass, Richmond's not good. We figured that out. Dayton is Dayton. They look like they're pretty solid, but they keep losing games.
Yeah, it's been that way forever.
It really has. So it's kind of a weird league this season, especially because Xavier is sort of in that middle group too.
Yeah.
It's been kind of difficult and challenging to rank, but the Big Ten has been far easier. No, I shouldn't say easier. It's been less obscure, I guess I'd say. There are fewer teams to account for, and you kind of have a basic idea of like who the four worst teams in the league are. So you just kind of work up from there.
Yeah, a little more crystalline in the Big Ten. I want to pop around with a bunch of random topics here because you're a great guest for that. Pittsburgh is a top 10 KenPom team right now, EB, and this was a team that I think we both had figured, not that they had turned a corner, but just had reverted to form. We expected them to be pretty good. They don't have, I guess, I mean, losing at Rutgers is kind of a rough loss, but that's a league road game. So 14-4 overall. I've seen them in person. They look okay, but I'm actually not nearly as sold on them as I thought I would be. And then as I was just kind of doing some random stuff last night, as I was watching the VCU St. Joe's game, I had noticed that, whoa, you know, Pitt's a top 10 team in KenPom. And KenPom, to his own admission, sometimes they're just teams that figure out the formula. Wisconsin, of course, the ultimate example there. But I just wanted your thoughts here as we get into some Big East play. And Pitt actually has a home game against UConn that I'm pretty intrigued about on Saturday. What you thought of the Panthers and if they are as good as advertised, or maybe you're kind of on the same plane with me thinking we need to see a little more here.
Yeah, they're pretty baffling. And it's one of those instances, like 9 times out of 10, if you let tempo free statistics guide your way, especially for teams you haven't had the opportunity to see, or at least see play good teams, right? Like then you're usually in very good shape. But every now and then there's a team that just doesn't, you know, they look great on paper and then they get into some tougher parts of their schedule, or they play a few teams who don't match up particularly well with them, and for whatever reason, they completely make you look stupid. Because for the entirety of November and December, I was screaming, "There, look at them! You know, look at their numbers! Look at their top 10 team in KenPom! Everybody, look! No, everyone's sleeping on Pitt. They could win the Big East, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And yeah, that's not going so well so far. It is sort of confusing, but you watch them play, and they don't really have – I mean, especially with Trayvon Woodall sort of fighting through a few things injury-wise, they don't really have a dynamic guard on the perimeter to make things happen. I don't know if Trey Ziegler is going to be that guy, but he's been just sort of AWOL in their lineup for most of the season. And I mean, I love, you know, there are a lot of things to like about Pitt. They rebound the ball incredibly well on the offensive end. I think Steven Adams is great. I think overall they're pretty solid, but, you know, you look at the wins that they've had compared to some of their early Big East losses, especially at home. And, you know, it's hard to argue that they're as good as their sort of statistical profile this season, even though that might be the case and it might level off before the end of the year. It's pretty tough to, you know, I'm not going to put them in the top 10 of my power rankings because they've got a really good efficiency margin for having however many losses in the Big East, you know. So they've been a very weird team, one I sort of stuck my neck out for. And they burnt me a little bit like Belmont in the tournament every year. But
yeah. Yeah, no, but one game sample size, so we know how that works here. Now, before we look more ahead, I wanted to circle back and say, one, it was ridiculous that on back-to-back nights we had such similar plays play out. We had Vandy and Ole Miss, and then we had St. Mary's and BYU essentially trade 3-point baskets in the final. Or no, Haas hit a 2-pointer, but the trade baskets in the final 10 seconds or so on back-to-back nights, and the way they played out was very similar. And you had mentioned that Haas' shot was pretty boss, very Nowitzki of him. And indeed, it got overlooked because Dellavedova just hit the most incredible, incredible shot. But I wanted to actually talk about Henderson and Ole Miss, Marshall Henderson, who hit the three to send it into OT, and then the Rebels ran away with it down in Nashville against Vanderbilt. Ole Miss is a team that's going to probably – it'll catch on in college hoop circles. 14-2 team right now in the SEC, a down SEC. So college hoops writers will probably recognize that this team is improved and should go to its first tournament under Andy Kennedy. It should. Let's see what they do. But Henderson is – I put up just a quick post the other day. Shane Ryan, I guess, had cut together – he of Grantland, he had cut together basically all of Henderson's mannerisms during the Vandy game, and he is a weird, talented, emotional player. I don't know how much you saw that game, EB, but it was interesting, and I'm actually intrigued to see how good Ole Miss is going forward, and as more people realize Henderson's leading the league in scoring, if he's able to handle that. Because there were a couple times there where Kennedy was clearly, like, reining this kid in. I mean, he was very emotional, scowling at the student section. He talks a lot. Did you happen to see the video or see the game and have thoughts on Henderson as a player?
I saw both. And yes, I think I'm a big fan for all of the reasons that you stated. I mean, he can obviously play, he can obviously shoot. And growing up in Iowa, where Cliff Kingsbury used to ply his trade, I have always been partial and, you know, having attended Indiana, where Tom Coverdale and any number of players of this ilk used to ply their trade, I have always been partial to the brash 3-point shooter. And I never really hated J.J. Redick, probably the way I was supposed to, even when I was in school, because I can respect a guy who makes 50% of his threes and then comes back down the court looking like a kid I could have gone to high school with.
Exactly.
Well, like, he's Michael Jordan. It's always hilarious. And so, yeah, no, Marshall Henderson, I mean, his background, he's had some issues in college, obviously. He's been hopping around from JUCOs and, you know, throughout his career from D1 schools. And, I mean, he's finally found a home at Ole Miss, but he's also found a place where he – right away sort of came in and was like the immediate number one offensive option and on a good team. And I think it's fantastic because Ole Miss has a chance to really contend in the SEC this year. With the exception of Florida, there are no, you know, I think Florida's the clear favorite, but other than that, it's pretty wide open. And B gets a chance to take enough shots that we get to see him be featured in broadcasts with lots of close-ups, and you get to see him sort of twitching and making crazy faces at people. Fantastic. I am a big fan.
Yeah, he has a chance here to be something of a must-see product. I just hope it's more for the right reasons than the wrong, because there is a little bit of a ticking time bomb aspect to him, and and hopefully they can keep the emotions pointed in the right direction there. All right.
Let the dark side of the force.
Exactly. All right, let's look ahead to the weekend here. We'll run down. Sunday doesn't really offer up much because we got the conference title games in the NFL, but Saturday's got a ton. And we'll kind of go chronologically here. There's a couple of noon tips. Maryland at UNC, UConn at Pitt. We talked about Pitt. I'm actually interested to see what UConn can do in that game. But more Maryland at Carolina. This is a game I just don't know what to expect here. And I guess, you know, if Carolina is able to win and hold serve at home, good on them. You can't fault Maryland too much. If Maryland actually wins, they're going to have back-to-back W's against NC State, which they got earlier this week at home, and the kids ran onto the court, which was fun and weird. And then they'll beat the Heels, who look inconsistent. And I'm actually not even totally sold yet that Carolina is going to the tournament. If they win this one, I'll buy in. But did you have any thoughts or forecasts for that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're pretty evenly matched teams as far as I'm concerned right now, I think.
Yeah, how does Carolina stop Len? I mean, I don't see how that's happening.
Yeah, no, Alex Len is a tough. I kind of forget about him because, and I shouldn't, but because he was so sort of not disappointing, but just he was just a freshman last year, and I remember he came in and was just like so hyped. Everybody is, look out for this Alex Len kid. He's going to be going pro. And then he sort of came out and he was just your average, you know, he was like Alex Ola is at Northwestern this year. Average, tall, college center who needs to work on a lot of things. And this year he's gotten so much better. He's improved so many different little facets of his game, particularly on the defensive end where he's a force shot blocking that. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a tough matchup for North Carolina, but I think North Carolina for me is still just sort of, they give you 35 hard minutes, 32 hard minutes, and they have a little lapse in between there somewhere, then they're probably going to be okay at home against a team like Maryland. But if they have a whole half that they are just, nothing is connected to the other thing, mentally or, you know, basketball wise, then they could, they can lose to just about anybody, I think.
Yeah. All right. Harvard at Memphis, 12:30. That's just a sneaky one. Keep an eye on Harvard at Memphis. That's on local Fox affiliates. If you're in the area. Running down the list here, I mean, Kansas at Texas shouldn't be too much. I would think the Jayhawks should win that. Texas is a decent defensive team, but eh. West Virginia at Purdue doesn't do too much. Both of those are CBS games. ESPN at 2:00 has Missouri at Florida, so that's a nice one. I would love to see Missouri go in and really give the Gators a game because, as you said, it's kind of Florida and then Kentucky, Missouri, Ole Miss, and then everyone else. I agree with that. I'm rooting for more intrigue in the SEC, though. Any expectations that Mizzou will make this close, or is this actually a game where Florida, you know, they're at home, maybe they win by 16 and definitively, like, no, just no argument, period. It's us and then everyone else.
I would lean more toward the latter scenario than the former. And that's not, you know, that's not Missouri hate, but I think Missouri is, while a good team, maybe just a tad bit overrated, just a smidge overrated. And I think Florida is probably a good deal underrated right now, given how well they've played on the defensive end, which is, you know, they've been a really good scoring team for the last 3 years, particularly last year. They were never a good defensive team last year. They were always just sort of so-so. And they got to the Elite Eight. And I think this year's team is clearly, I mean, it's demonstrably better on the defensive end. They really guard people. They're the top five defense this year to go along with their offense. And I just think they you know, the way they played against Texas A&M, I would lean toward the more likely scenario being that Florida comes out and just spanks them and everyone says, oh, yeah, we forgot. Florida's really, really good. At least that's what I think should happen. We'll see.
Arizona at Arizona State is a sneaky one as well because no one is paying any attention to the Sun Devils, who have started off 14-3. this is when they got to win just to kind of legitimize themselves. So I'm going to wait on Herb Sendek team talk until they win a game like this, and then we can enter them into the conversation. But they are 14-3, and it's worth at least noting here. The big one is – well, there's a couple of big ones at four. Three of them, in fact. Oregon at UCLA on CBS, Syracuse at Louisville on ESPN, Creighton at Wichita State on ESPN2. And this is like – it's like, you know, the NFL putting like all the awesome games on at 1 o'clock in the same window. Like, all these start at four. All of them are very intriguing because you have basically Oregon and UCLA both contending to be the Pac-12's best, along with Zona. Syracuse and Louisville, top of the Big East. We'll see what they do. And then Creighton at Wichita State, who has Carl Hall back. He's an awesome player. He's Wichita State's best player. This might be the only time Creighton loses in the Valley all season. Go anywhere you want with that, man.
Well, if you're asking me to run something up the television flagpole over here, I don't know what to tell you. I don't really have that kind of pull, but you know, I'll do my best. But yeah, no, this is 4 p.m. on Saturday is why the internet was invented.
Yeah.
It will allow me to watch all three games at the same time, at least theoretically. And I will bathe in the basketball awesomeness. I think the best game of those three is Syracuse at Louisville. But obviously Creighton at Wichita State's a big game too, because Wichita State is the only team in the Valley really capable of knocking off Creighton, capable of, you know, giving them a couple of regular season losses. I mean, Creighton might lose a game or two here and there, but nothing that's probably going to really hurt them. But if they lose two to Wichita State, then we've got issues. So, It's a very, very interesting game, and obviously all of those are a great prelude for Gonzaga, Butler at the end of the night. And the whole Butler thing is sort of going to be the great atmosphere and the interesting environment, and I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of featurettes about Hinkle, and the game day show itself on Saturday morning will be fantastic. But that trio of games, I think especially Syracuse Louisville beforehand is really, really good.
Yeah, I'm liking how stacked this Saturday slate is. I did want to get a little bit on touch on Zaga Butler to wrap up the podcast here, because you know Butler won't have Rodney Clark, so we get robbed just a little bit of it. Still think Butler has a chance to win. But that said, I've loved Gonzaga since the start of the season. I'm kind of waiting for them to break my heart whenever that might come. But hey, just game day's there. This is great. And just in general, that we have this kind of matchup, interconference, middle of January, something good for hoops. You know, we'll have so much stuff earlier in the day, and then it'll kind of wrap up with this as a spotlight game. I just like the overall fact that it's reached a point where this kind of thing should be expected, and both these teams are really good, and both of them minimally have Sweet 16 expectations this year.
Yeah, no, it's a great game. I mean, if it was on at noon on Saturday, it would be a fun game. But I think the fact that the game day is going to be there, and that I think for Butler fans especially, it's going to be kind of a validation of where their program's at right now, and sort of that outsider status that you get as a mid-major who wins from the Horizon League. You know, they have a new league. And game day is there, and it's the first time it's ever been at Hinkle Fieldhouse. And Hinkle Fieldhouse is awesome, and I'm really jealous that I don't get to go. It's just a really fun college basketball-ish way to start the game day slate this season. And I don't think they could have picked a better game or a better venue for it. And I'm already looking forward to the NBA fans tuning in and being like, oh, these teams aren't any good. there's only one NBA prospect on this. Blur, blur, blur. That's going to be a lot of fun, too.
Blur, blur. I know, man. I hear you. I hear you in that regard. Hey, it should be awesome. Hey, thanks for coming back on, too, man. It's good to have you on. You know, love doing the inter ESPN CBS love there. So my thanks to you. I know you got a busy Friday ramping up here before the Saturday comes, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. And I got to get the podcast to the people before seeing Guster tonight. Do you enjoy Guster? Do you know Guster at all?
When I was the summer before college, I remember really liking Guster a lot, and I saw them at Summerfest in Milwaukee. And then they played it when I was in college. They played at a fraternity that I went to. I wasn't a member of, but I was allowed to visit for the concert, I guess. And that was fun. And I haven't listened to a thing they've done in the 8 years since.
Yeah, so it goes with so many. They're just, they're one of my more favorite bands. And I'm embarrassed to say, I'm not embarrassed to say because I said it, but so going with the fiance tonight real quick. And they played in Danbury, Connecticut, north of me where I used to live back in late 2011. And at the time I was debating on proposing and how to do it. And it's a long story, but the drummer actually like has a Netscape email address, and I emailed him like 8 years ago, literally, and he still has it. Like he'll still send out emails from it, and he's responded. And at the show, I was like, man, I really should have just tried to get them. My fiance's name is Diane, and they have a song called Diane. I was like, I should have just tried to get them to play Diane and propose to you right there. And then she kind of like, you know, lovingly smacked me and was like, you idiot, why didn't you try to do that? That would have been the best thing ever, because she really, really loves the band, and I introduced them to her. And so tonight happens to be her birthday, and they happen to be playing a show. So I actually tweeted at the Guster account and was like, here's, just so you know, I kind of screwed up the first time. We're going. If you want to play it, we'll be there. I understand, given recent events, I might have to prove this girl exists and it's her birthday. I can do that. But just an FYI. I don't think they're going to do it, but...
Be great. No, that's you know, the ethic of those bands. I remember being a sort of a trying to learn to play guitar via. Oh, I'm looking at Twitter right now. I'm seeing all your tweets.
It's really, yeah,
so sweet, Matt. You're such a good fiance.
As I record the podcast on her birthday, and she's like hanging in the bedroom. Yeah, I'm a great guy.
Great fiance. Well, if she gets her Guster song, all will be well. Les Affaires de Norlanders will be well in order. And, you'll be good. And just, you know, enjoy the show, but don't have too many adult beverages. You've got a lot of college basketball tomorrow. I don't want to see anything about you being hungover in the morning. We can't have that, man. You need to be head on a swivel, because there are a lot of college basketball videos you're going to need to put on Twitter tomorrow that I'm...
I know. I'll have the phone at the ready. You can follow Eamon on Twitter. I'm going to spell it out for you nice and slow because he's a very, very good follow. EamonBrennan. Eamon Brennan. And read him on ESPN.com, College Basketball Nation. He is the lead blogger, fantastic podcast guest. Residing over there in Chicago, my favorite city in the country. It was great to have you on again, man, and we'll do this once more before the season's over, all right?
I hope so. I'll see you then, man.
All right, thank you, and thank you for everyone for listening. Feel free to subscribe if you haven't already on iTunes. We'll be back on Monday and talking plenty about that loaded Saturday in hoops. We'll talk to you then.